The Crusade Channel is no longer free to listen, but it is free of commercials. And that's a winner for you. SpongeBob, slow your roll there, buddy.
Take it easy, dude.
Oh, yeah.
Now, let's calmly proceed back to more of what you bought your Founders Pass membership for, here on the Crusade Channel.
Brondo's got with plants crates, got electrolytes. I thought the Deliverers from Evil tapes had with plants crates. It's got spooks, got ghosts. Or if you missed it last night, ladies and gents, all I can tell you is, yep, you missed it. Greetings, it is a free phone Friday here on the Mike Church Show. On the Crusade Channel, king-size truth from radio-size speakers, asking the question of the day.
What in the wide, wide world of sports is going on here?
Well, I'll tell you. You all ought to know the drill by now.
Oh, and remember, Friday is Hawaiian Shirt Day. So, you know, if you want to, go ahead and wear a Hawaiian shirt and jeans.
Howdy, could we use it? Here you are charged with the task of telling us what it is we shall talk about here on the program. Telephone number to take me up on my kind, benevolent, beneficent offer the use of these radio airwaves. Call me at 844-527-8723. 844-5-CRUSADE. Email me directly. My email address is the same as it ever was. Often given out, so very rarely used appropriately. But I digress. King Dude, K-I-N-G-D-U-D-E, K-I-N-G-D-U-D-E, 1-E, at MikeChurch.com. Official website for all things yours truly is online at MikeChurch.com. Today's pile of prep is up and minted. We got brand new Veritas, brand new Founding Fathers Red Pill clips from yesterday's and the day before show. The yesterday's podcast is up there. It's all on the site at MikeChurch.com. But the real action is on the Crusade Channel website, where you can go and download the Piercing Truth, brand new episodes number 7 and number 8. Along with the other 6 are now available. If you're a Founders Pass member, then the download link should appear in a window on the download page for you to download If you're a founding brother, father, or crusader level member or higher. So we will get the Deliver Us From Evil tapes, episode number 4, which made its world broadcast debut last night here at 7, well, a little after 7. it's not going to air again. It goes directly to On Demand, but the final edition of it is not yet quite prepared. It'll be ready early this morning, and as soon as it is, you will be notified, and we will send out a coupon code that you can use in the On Demand store to download your first $10 worth for free. That goes for all of you. Don't cost nothing. But if you're not on the Daily Republican email newsletter list, you're not going to get the $10 coupon. Just another reason to go to my site, MikeChurch.com/email. That works now, MikeChurch.com/email, and sign up for my daily newsletter. Then you'll get the $10 coupon sent out to you later on today, and you can go shopping for a great audio to listen to this Lent. You know, we got all of my interviews with Chris Ferrara and Carrie Gress, and good Lord, I can't even remember all of them that are in the On Demand store. All the Fatima interviews, all the Fatima shows, all of that is there in the On Demand store at CrusadeChannel.com. I got a couple of little tidbits here to start the program with today. Now, if Mitter Rick Barrett is listening, you need to call this guy up from thefederalist.com who wrote this story. Why did it take 2 weeks to discover Parkland students astroturfing? I believe Mitter Barrett revealed to you the day after the protest began, but 2 days after the shooting, that I'm trying to remember the name of the blog now that had published the report that basically said that the protesters or the student protesters that showed up at Parkland or that would have been the following Tuesday or Wednesday at the Florida State Legislature. And look, we talked about this. I even played some of the audio during a Crusade Channel news section. I said, that's far too eloquent for a destroyed because my best friends were shot in front of me teenager to have written. And as Rick said on the Barrett brief, this is days afterwards or the day of the when the protest began that this is what you know what the irony is. Do you know who coined the term AstroTurf? I don't even want to say it. It distresses me so. Who coined the term AstroTurf? That'd have been Mitt's Nazi Pelosi.
Well, these aren't real.
And that was in response to the Tea Party. Back in 2009, when I and many of you went to the Barrett says he's on it. What does that mean, Mitter Barrett? You going to call and give me an update? I know you had this story. I know we had the story here. Anyways, AstroTurf was coined back on tax day, April of 2009, April 5th. I can give you the day, April 15th. How many of you remember this? This was the dawning of the Tea Party. This is the dawning of this after Rick Santelli on CNBC gave that famous monologue. He said, do you want to pay your neighbor's mortgage? This is insanity what President Obama's doing. I don't want to pay my neighbor's mortgage. You might remember, what America needs is a new Tea Party. And so, Tea Party was born. And on April the 15th, I don't believe this will ever happen again. Well, you know, I shouldn't say because I don't know. I doubt that this will ever happen again. But on April the 15th, 2009, I bet many of you went to these things. I know I was in Lafayette Square, right across from the White House. And it was pouring down rain. It was like 50 degrees. It was miserable. Absolutely freaking miserable. And there was a small stage set up there. And there was probably a couple thousand people brave the rain. CNN was there. One time I believe I was on CNN. And they filmed the whole thing. It was a big tax protest rally. Mrs. O'Connell, you were back here in Mandeville on the lakefront. There was a big rally here. There was all manner rally and protest out there. And gosh, I'm looking to see if I have any of my old Tea Party montages. Remember the Keith Olbermann and others? This is a bunch of teabaggers. They're not Tea Partiers. They're teabaggers. They derisively called people. I still remember the altercation between Susie Rogeden at the Chicago Tea Party event, who wound up working down here in New Orleans at Channel 26, and I had to host news shows with her for a couple of years. Who got in the face of a protest? Do you think this is an appropriate place to bring children to? You remember that? Remember? Well, as the Tea Party rallies were going on April the 15th, 2009, all across America, the media industrial complex sprang into action, and they were absolutely livid over it. Why? Who are these? And they were livid because President Obama was black, so that automatically meant that everyone that showed up at a Tea Party rally was a racist. And that's when Nancy Pelosi famously went on and accused the front and center people with placards and signs and Uncle Sam costumes and what have you of being astroturfers. Folks, you can look this up. I can still remember
these aren't real protests. These are just a bunch of astroturfers. They're not real American. They're not real Americans.
As a matter of fact, that's how the Queen of Pain song was born. You people have been delighting all week in the walk down memory lane for the Mike Church Show band. See, the hits just never stop here.
Bill of Rights are dead like yesterday. There's a deficit of a trillion to top. There's a new she's got to stop. She has stood here before during her speaker's reign, with the Constitution burning around her brain. I guess she's always hoping she'll drive us insane, 'cause it's her destiny to be the Queen of Pain. There's a gay page trapped in Bonnie.
Anthology collection in the store you didn't shop at yesterday.
Maybe it's on by
Bill of Rights are dead like yesterday.
Come on now. Hit it.
She has stood here before.
A little Nancy Pelosi action for you. I cut about 2 minutes out of that, that song. The album version, the anthology version has the whole thing on it. That's why there was a little edit clip in there. For brevity, you see. We think of everything around here. 844-527-8723. That song is available as a download on the anthology collection. So why did it take 2 weeks to discover Parkland students' astroturfing? The whole point of the astroturf is because that's Pelosi's term. Well, it didn't take 2 weeks. As a matter of fact, anybody that watched that circus in the Florida legislature, if you didn't immediately go, wait a minute, wait a minute, wait a minute, wait a minute. Are you telling me you're so star-spangled, grieving, awesome, you stayed up last night and wrote all that on your own, and without rehearsing it, came out here to pour your heart out? Remember Bill Murray from Stripes? That's the fact, Jack! No, it's not the fact, Jack. Anyways, to the story. Can you believe these kids begins this story? It's been a recurring theme of the coverage of the Parkland school shooting. The remarkable effectiveness of the high school students who created a gun control organization in the wake of the massacre. In seemingly no time, the magical kids had organized events ranging from a national march to a mass school walkout. And they brought $1 million in donations in from Oprah Winfrey and George Clooney. Oh, how sweet. The Miami Herald had credited their success to the school's stellar debate program. The Wall Street Journal said it was because they were born online and organizing was instinctive. On February the 28th, BuzzFeed came out with the actual story. Representative Debbie Wasserman Schultz, aiding in the lobbying in Tallahassee, a teachers union organizing the buses that got the kids there. Michael Bloomberg's groups in the Women's March working on the upcoming March for Our Lives. MoveOn.org doing social media promotion and March logistics and training for student activists provided by federally funded Planned Parenthood. Yeah. Grassroots. Sure it is. The American president of the American Federation of Teachers told BuzzFeed they're also behind the national school walkout, which journalists had previously assured the public was the sole work of one single teenager. In other words, the response was professionalized. That's not surprising because this is what organization that gets results actually looks like. It's not a bunch of magical kids in somebody's living room, nor is it surprising that the professionalization happened right there off the bat. Broward County's teachers union is militant, and Representative Ted Lieu stated on Twitter that his family knows Parkland student activist Danny Hogg's family, so there were plenty of opportunities for grown-ups with resources and skills to connect the kids. Ted Lieu. This conspiracy theory is insane! Thewert, you're not listening to me, Thewert! This is insane! Our kids know David Hogg! My wife and I know his mom, who taught at our kids' elementary school before they moved to Florida! Although David is very articulate, he is not a crisis actor! He's a student who lost 17 of his classmates to bullets, howled Ted Lieu on Twitter. Really? Sure he is. That's before you get to whether any of them had been involved in the women's march. According to BuzzFeed, Wasserman Schultz was running on day two. You know, folks, I don't want to go Alex Jones conspiracy on this stuff, but all this stuff is just too flipping convenient. And it's almost as though these people are out there, it's like they got the Batman symbol on the sky, on the night sky. signifying that George Clooney and George Soros and Oprah Winfrey and all the rest of them be called into duty to save America and organize and activate into protest. I mean, are we star-spangled awesome at protest or what? I'm serious. We can't make a VCR to save our lives, as George Carlin said. Can't make our own DVD players. Can't get health care to our old people. Can't educate our young people. But we can sure as hell march down your country street, can't we? It is almost as though they're really... let me rephrase that because it won't make sense. It is almost as though there is no reality. That reality is what can be manufactured in the name of social justice and activism. So there's nothing, there is no instance in life that cannot be called upon as an excuse or as a bridge to a social justice debate, to a social justice protest. Here's the scary part. These millennial craptard losers, because of actuarial tables, meaning we're going to die, are ultimately going to be in charge. Can you say, Lord of the Flies? What's striking about all this isn't the organization, right? Who wrote this piece for The Federalist? I didn't get it from CNN. I got it from The Federalist. As usual, it lopped off. David Hines. What's striking about all this isn't the organization. You know how many minutes, 5 weeks ago, if I'd asked for that, how many minutes I would have been sitting here looking at the Three Stooges cutout going, Nice to know who that, Thank the Lord for the little things. What's striking about all this isn't the organization. If you start reading books about organizing, it's clear how it all works. I wish someone would give me that book. I'm just trying to cross like 1,000 listeners in one day here on the Crusade Channel, which has eluded me for 29 months. It's happened twice. Please. This despite increases in people becoming members. I didn't just become members and throw money at me and say, okay, I'll become a member. Just shut up. Stop emailing me. I'll join, but I'm not listening. Seriously, folks. Really. You people that all listen in podcast, just find some way to turn some device on. Leave it on at home so it doesn't suck up all your bandwidth. I don't even care if you're actually listening. I just want to see the number go up once before I die. Please, I'm begging you. If you start reading books about organizing, it's clear how all this works. Okay, again, I'd like to know. But no journalist covering the story wrote about this stuff for 2 weeks. Instead, every story was about the Parkland kids being magically effective. Not here on the Crusade Channel. On Twitter, I lost track of the number of blue checks rhapsodizing over how effective the kids' organizational instincts were. But organizing isn't instinctive. It's skilled work you have to learn how to do, and it really takes a lot of people. You don't just get a few magical kids who are amazing and naturally good at it. The real tip-off should have been the $500,000 donations from Winfrey and Clooney. Big celebrities don't just give huge money to strangers on a whim. Again, I have a mailbox, and if you need to give some money away, I'm looking for 30 large for the Crusade Channel by April the 2nd. Write me, and I'll send you the P.O. box address. I'm just saying, you know, if you want to drop a donation on someone. But the press's response was to be ever more impressed with the cheerings. For 2 weeks, journalists abjectly failed. Well, Mr. Mitter Hines, this is not their job. They don't investigate anything anymore. The only thing they investigate...
What do they post on social media? Do they have social media train? Do they have social media trail? Did he ever ask any woman out on a date? Did she want him to ask her out on a date?
Folks, you do know that this is where a lot of this stuff is going. So you young guys out there, I don't know if you know this, but you're not supposed to be asking fair maidens out on dates unless you are sure that they want you to ask them, because even asking them is a condition for harassment, tyranny, me too-ism. Matt Pierce of the Los Angeles Times would have been ideally placed to write an excellent article. Not only is he an organizer for the Times Union, he moderated a panel on leftist activism for the LA Times Book Festival and has the appropriate connections in organizing. Instead, he wrote about a school walkout, not what was behind it. But it's not just a mainstream media problem. None of the rightly outlets writing about Parkland picked up on the clear evidence that professional organizers were backing the Parkland kids. Folks, I am telling you, experience is all I needed. I know how difficult it is to, when people used to invite me to places to go speak in front of crowds, I know how difficult it is to get in front of a crowd, even if you have prepared remarks, and say them without flubbing the language, your palms dripping sweat, resisting the temptation to ad-lib, all that. That's not something that anybody and everybody can do. Yet did you see the cavalcade, the caravan of Utes? Strutted up to the microphone, and without missing a semicolon or a comma, deliver their messages. Well, you didn't have to sit there and watch your classmates die. Hey, sweet cheeks, neither did you. You heard about it, neither did you. The closest anyone got was Elizabeth Harrington at the Washington Free Beacon, who noted that Clooney's publicist was booking the kids' media interviews pro bono and said that a friend had asked him to do it. The result of all this is that the average righty does not understand what's going on in activism because all they see is what the press covers. Well, let me explain to you, Mr. Hines, why that is. The average righty, your average member of the talk radio mafia, lives inside what I call the conservative echo chamber. Now, full disclosure, I did not invent the term. I lifted it. You didn't invent that term. No, I gave credit. But it is an echo chamber. Outside of the echo chamber, no sunlight and certainly no information gets in. They share the... go to the same places, they eat the same foods, their children marry the same people. And by the way, they're in the same echo chamber that the libtards are in. Somebody had posted on the Mike Churchill fan page on Facebook, on the rare occasion that one of you went there and actually responded to something that was posted. Oh, I know what it was. Mitter Church, did you see that NPR is starting a conservative TV show? You wanna be a host? To which I responded, I stopped using the advertising slogan conservative years ago. Now, if they start one for Crusaders or Knights, I'm all in. Conservative bumper sticker means absolutely, you know what it means? It means you're a member of the echo chamber. You couldn't think your way out of reading four pages of G.K. Chesterton's Orphovox. And understand the beauty and the brilliance that Chesterton was getting across, true in 1908 and true today. As a matter of fact, if you want a good measure of someone in the echo chamber, ask them if they read Chesterton. They read Chesterton. They're not in the echo chamber. Echo chamberites do not read Chesterton. They read Mises and Hayek, and they read, some of them may read Russell Kirk, but they'll tell you all about the history books that they've read, and they've read this and that and the other. And they've read all the libertarian screeds and, you know, all about how they've read Locke and all that. They don't read Chesterton. Why? Because Chesterton screams truth. He does not scream conformity to uninformity. How do you like that? Coined the phrase. Write that down, Mrs. O'Connell. Put that in the run of conformity to inconformity. Conformity to uninformity. Blah, blah, blah. On one hand, the issue with people who believe in crisis actors and various other kinds of conspiracy theories is that they're susceptible. If they don't believe in crisis actors, they'd believe in something else, and they probably do. But on the other hand, I think one reason there's an opportunity for righty conspiracy types to get all hopped up on goofballs with respect to protest and such is the abject failure of the righty establishment to explain to its people how protesters actually work. You know, you need to go back into the King Dude's Wayback Machine somewhere on my website at MikeChurch.com and on the Crusade Channel website. I interviewed Matthew Sheffield, who wrote the piece about the conservative echo chamber and demonstrated that all of you that still live in the conservative echo chamber think you're in some kind of a mass majority. You know, Limbaugh used to say, "My friends, conservatism is a majority. We just aren't told about it by the libs in the news media." No, Rush, there is no conservative majority. There is certainly no conservative majority on media anywhere. The libs still dominate. And the fact that the echo chamber gets to call and remains, quote, conservative, close quote, with their banal ideas of what intelligence is, ought to tell you everything you need to know about the current political situation in which you find yourself in and why it is futile. Now, look, if you just enjoy him hawing around about politics and disagreeing with people and screaming at them and what have you, well, then go ahead, by all means, continue it as a hobby. It's not going to save your soul, and it's not going to save... You're not going to save the Republic, as they say. Sorry, that dog don't hunt. Mitter Hines' conclusion. I'll come back to it in a moment. This results in occasional hilarity when the right tries to organize its own protests. For example, then internet celebrity Baked Alaska tried to create pro-Trump flash mobs in Los Angeles during the election. His efforts consisted of posting times and locations online, and that's it. You see this attitude often among righties. We have the internet. We'll post a notice that people will show up. No, they won't. Trust me, we post notices that this show is on every day. They don't show up. As a matter of fact, the only way we can actually get our friends and our family members to listen to this show and this channel, and that's not a reflection on the show and the channel, it's a habitual thing, is to actually grab their phones from them, put the app on there, and then turn it on. The conservative echo chamber has succeeded in convincing those that listen to it, those that watch it, that it's all there is. It is salvation on Fox News, don't you see? You don't get salvation in pews and on your knees on Sundays in confession and receiving the Blessed Sacrament. You get it by being, what do you know? I bet he hasn't read a newspaper in years. Have you? Why does reading a newspaper make one smart? Why know this? No, you know stuff to go on a conservative, a quote, conservative, close quote version of, are you smarter than a fifth grader? Well, if you taught the fifth grader a standardized test and then you base the questions upon the standardized test, no, you're probably not. which is why adults seem so dumbfounded by these things because of these idiotic questions that are out. Well, can you do? But they're all questions from the standardized test. Can one of those little tykes, can they actually think? Write me an essay, Junior. 500 words. You got an hour. Write me an essay on the dangers of mortal sin. Go. What's mortal? Get a dictionary. We're not allowed to have it. What's sin? Okay, next subject. It's not that Baked Alaska needed a magical kid because there are no magical kids. They're just hard work, and our press and politicos do everyone a disservice when they pretend otherwise. Here's an example of how to turn out people, cribbed from Organizing for Social Change, the activist manual published by the Midwest Academy, which has been around since 1973 and has trained over 30,000 activists, some of whom went on to found their own training schools. Say you're running an organization that wants to impress a city councilman, and you've landed a meeting. You want your group to look bigger than it is. You've got 15 dedicated people you know will go, but you want to show the councilman 60 people. Well, I can tell you how you do it. You hand out some coupons for free Dumble Junior cheeseburgers from Sonic. They'll show up. First thing you do is get 10 people from other groups. That leaves 35. To get them, you don't post an ad on Craigslist. You look in your database of people who've signed your petitions or whatever, call and ask them to come. You know, maybe that's what we should start. Instead of sending email schedules out every day, we should just start asking people for their phone numbers and send them text messages. Hey, Llama, Mike Church Show starts in 20 minutes. You've been paying for it for 3 years, but you've never listened to it once. I'm serious. People, somebody asked me this the other day, and I said, well, you know, imagine that you are let's just pretend for just a moment that you're Drew Brees. He's going to go down as one of the best NFL quarterbacks in history. And that's not an accident. He works hard. He's insanely accurate. They put a computer against the guy on one of those sports medicine shows, and he beat the computer. But let's just say that no one knows that you're Drew Brees, and becoming a professional football player is something that everyone thinks that they can do. Just like today, everyone thinks that they're a broadcaster. You can't swing a dead cat on the internet and not hit someone's, oh, I got a podcast. Oh, do you? That, and in the mind of, in the mind of conservatives, that makes them a broadcaster. No, it makes them someone that went to Sweetwater.com, plunked $300 down for a Z Zoom AudioVox recorder, a chintzy microphone, and they put a couple of bath mats up on their walls, and they talked at it for 20 minutes. Podcast, right? Instant broadcaster, right? Well, in the same manner, you know, people are handed foot. Hey, can anyone hold a football? Yeah. Can you throw one? Everybody can throw a football. Right. I can only throw it 4 yards, but I can throw it. Well, hey, Drew. Hey, Llama. Getting back in the line. There's 4,000 people ahead of you to try out. That's what broadcasting and journalism have become today, thanks to technology. Everybody is a profession. Everybody has a calling. Do they work at it? No. They don't. Look, you don't have to. You can absolutely stink at doing this. But if you're clever enough to write a headline, bam-o. If you're good at networking, bam-o. Anyways, so Mr. Hines is complaining about how his right-wing cohorts in broadcasting and media don't do their jobs. Well, sir, they are doing their jobs. And how do you know that there are gifted and talented people there? I think it's a safe bet that a majority of them are not gifted and talented. They just happen to be the last people standing at the end of the calling, at the end of the casting call. And by the way, if you're watching Fox News, do you note how all of the broadcasters on, the genius broadcasters on Fox News, on CNN, all the rest of them, just happen to be gorgeous, beautiful. And they fit into the single mono-colored, sleeveless, arm-sleeveless, hemline cut 6 inches above the knee, Fox News female uniform perfectly. Were they top of their journalism class? Is there such a thing as top? And look, I commend the guy for calling his peeps out, just like Sheffield called him out with the piece about the echo chamber. Were you able to find that echo chamber piece? Matthew Sheffield. Let me go to the telephones. It is a free phone Friday. I've meandered and rambled enough, I suppose. 844-527-8723. It's Mike Churchill here on the Crusade Channel, King Size Truth from Radio Size Speakers. Reminding you, it wasn't a fire drill yesterday to say that the 2018 Barbacoa Brotherhood, that's our charity cooking team, efforts have begun to raise funds for the Hogs for the Cause. This is an entity, an organization that just exists to provide cash grants to families that have children that are suffering pediatric brain cancers. Over the last 6 years, listeners to this show have assisted us in raising over $125,000. So we kicked off our 2018 campaign. Our total last year was just a little north of 35 large for the show. There's many ways you can join. There's 5 levels to join the Barbacoa Brotherhood as a associate member, beginning at $25 all the way up to $1,000. You can just make a cash donation of any kind. You can, we'll have auction items. Mitter Joss Will has donated 6 awesome bottles of St. Francis Winery wine. I've got some stuff that was donated by a listener that has been signed by golfer Phil Mickelson. I'm not talking about a book cover or something. When you see what we got up there that's going up for auction this year, some really great stuff. And you can also go in our wish list section and help. Look, we donate all our time, and if necessary, then funds. When we sell things at the festival on Friday and Saturday, March the 23rd and 24th, all those proceeds go to Hogs. I don't take $3 out for the rib or the fries. It all goes to them. So there is a wish list donations page where you can help offset the cost of all that, which are, I got to tell you, significant. And last year, we only had 3 items that were left undonated or unfunded by the end of the day. Our site is easy to get to, barbacoabrotherhood.com. If you can't find that, I've stickied it on the front page of mikechurch.com so you can't miss it, Barbacoa Brotherhood. And thank you very much in advance. This is Ted, New Jersey, first up here today on the Mike Church Show on Free Phone Friday at 844-527-8723. Hello, Ted, how you doing?
Hey, brother. Sister?
Hey, how sister, brother.
How are you today?
I am well, thank you.
Good. So I thought I'd call in today, Mike. I was listening last week's show. I think it was Thursday's show, and you had a guy who made a comment in the chat room, and then he called up later. I think his name was Scott.
Scott. Yep.
Yeah, from Tennessee, and you talked to him before, and he wanted to debate you about, I forgot what the issue was, some issue about scripture and one of the, Catholic tenets that you had mentioned. But
I read an email from someone who had said, well, that's what your Catholic religion says, but there's no salvation outside of, all you need is scripture. Something to that effect. And I responded to the email, and then Scott called and said, well, I think that that guy's right and you're wrong. And so we had a little conversation about it.
Yeah, and so I thought I'd call today and just maybe offer a little bit of advice. I've had many instances where I've debated our Protestant and evangelical brothers and sisters, usually online. It's usually when there's an article that's written that either attacks the church, attacks the faith,
mm-hmm.
or there's somebody who writes a comment that attacks the church or attacks the faith.
So
and
there's an opportunity for this every 10 seconds, in other words.
Yeah, just about. So, so when I have time, I take a few minutes and I try to engage them and sort of debate them. And the one thing I found, Mike, is that you really can't debate these folks on their ground. That is scripture for scripture. And the reason I think that's the case is because, you know, the Bible has like 750, 800,000 words in it. And a lot of those words are written in an allegorical way, a metaphorical way. Some of it's supposed to be literal. Some of it's supposed to be figurative. And you can imagine anything that you could, any words you could pick out, somebody would be able to go into that 750,000 word book and find something, take something out of context, not really understanding, you know, the way the words were written at the time, and try to dispute you, and you go back and forth. That's what I found online. Is you just end up going? It's an endless loop.
Yes, it is.
Back and forth.
No, it is.
So what I try to do is, I ask him just a few very simple questions, and the first question I ask them is, and you mentioned sola scriptura a minute ago. Where in the Bible is sola scriptura? Where does it say in the Bible that the Bible is the only source for faith? Where is that? And I asked them that because the answer is it's not. It's simply not there. It was made up by Martin Luther back in the 16th century.
16th.
They accepted as faith. So I asked them that question. Sometimes I'll get a response, well, it says in the Bible, but, you know, everything in the Bible is profitable for salvation. I say, yes, it does. But that's not the same as saying only the Bible is profitable for salvation. So that's the first question.
Well, you know, Ted, there is a you can't make a logical syllogism, a correct logical syllogism, out of sola scriptura, which is pretty much what you just said. And if you can't make a if you can't make a syllogism out of it, and if it's not in keeping with minor logic, then it's probably not going to turn out to be true. And I look at things from the point of view that, okay, this number one, does this apply to reason? And number two, is this conformity of the mind a reality? And what you find, I think, in almost all these instances is, no, it's not logical. You couldn't make a syllogism out of it. You could, but it would be an incorrect one. Now, if you were trying to, I guess it depends on what you're trying to assert. And people are going like, why do I have to learn logic now? No, you don't have to learn logic to do this. The point is that the faith itself has a logic to it.
Yes.
Catholicism has a logic to it. And it's a logic that endures regardless of who the Pope is, regardless of who the bishops are, regardless of who it is that's writing this or saying this or saying that at any point in time. There is a logic to it and reason, and it's grounded in reason, and it stays grounded in reason, which is why we shouldn't all get, and I know many people who do this, as do I, we shouldn't get too hung up on the affairs of churchmen. You know what Joseph Pierce tells me? He goes, Michael, I couldn't tell you the last controversy that I even know in the church. All I know is that I'm supposed to go on holy days of obligation. I'm supposed to go every Sunday, and I'm supposed to keep a prayer life and try do everything that order my life so that all that I do is towards salvation. That's really enough. Tally-ho, let's go have a scotch and a beer, shall we? I like Pierce's view.
He's absolutely right. And, you know, the other question I asked Mike, and this sort of ties it all together, is why do you reject holy tradition? Because after all, St. Paul exhorts us in 2 Thessalonians to hold fast to the tradition that were handed down to us. So why do you reject holy tradition? Because if you reject holy tradition, then you're going to end up with 40,000 different denominations, because everybody is trying to interpret those 750,000 scripture verses their own way.
Right. That's correct.
Exactly what's happened. Right. So if I remember if it was Brother Francis or maybe it was somewhere else I read it, but they said everything in the Catholic faith is either based on scripture and supported by tradition, or it's based on tradition and supported by scripture. It's one of the two. So if you reject tradition, you're like a lost sheep. You're out there on your own trying to figure it all out.
Well, so yeah, Ted, and there's another, there's something else too, that, you know, we have a pretty good, one of the good uses of the internet, and there are many, but one of those, and you don't have to have this on the internet, you could get a book, this is printed as well, but you can actually take any moral question of any moral theology, let's just say contraception. Well, you guys just made that up. You know, any church that thinks that it can ban contraception, I was in some online argument with someone, well, if the Catholics succeed in banning contraception, I'm like, first of all, the Catholics would not succeed in banning contraception. They would make it illegal once again to stifle God's life-creating process. That properly said, sir, that's what's happening. And that's the way it used to be, by the way. But the thing that I was going to mention is, no matter what the moral question is, there is an actual written down, unvariable catechism on it. And, Ted, it never fails. Every time I want to quote it to someone and I go look it up at the Vatican Archives, you know what is riddled? What is it riddled with?
Scripture.
Scripture. You want to read, well, why is contraception? You know, I have a neighbor. I don't understand. Why is contraception against the Catholic Church? Why? I don't get it. I can quote you, the church does a logical and a beautiful service to humanity by saying, okay, you're into the Bible, we're into the Bible too. We actually have popes who wrote encyclicals, who actually looked this stuff up, prayed to the Holy Spirit for a little divine intervention there, and received it, and this is what they wrote down. Wow, I didn't know y'all's teaching was all filled with scripture verses. Totally filled. I can't think of one that I've read that has anything to do with any moral theology, Ted, that didn't have scripture verse in it. Can you?
No, and you know what? It's like you said many times, quote Bishop Sheen, you know, Protestants don't hate the Catholic faith. They hate what they think the Catholic faith is. And the devil has done an incredible job of misrepresenting what the Catholic faith is. And unfortunately, I look at it as our poor Protestant brothers and sisters, they've been cheated. They've been cheated maybe out of their salvation. And they're taught to hate the faith. They're taught to dislike Catholics. You know, we're the whore of Babylon and all the rest of it. You know the stuff. And it's really a shame. And look, when I debate somebody online, a lot of times these people, they really don't want to listen to what you have to say. They want to sort of just win an argument. And I know I probably won't get through to them, but you know what? I know there's other people who read that stuff too. And I just hope that, you know, there's at least one who reads some of it and says, maybe I had to go back and just rethink what I've been taught and what I believe.
Yeah, and I also say that not only is it... if you look at people and you see souls and not fat or bald or tall or skinny or whatever, you see souls, then you start to understand, I think, what the saints saw and why they became saints, because they taught themselves and God gave them the grace to see souls. And when we see souls, it's not just Protestants and evangelicals. What about the lukewarm in the church?
Absolutely.
Now, wait a minute. There's an equal condemnation. What about the Pharisaical and the tradcast? These people are just as bad. Do they not know what charity is? Do you not know, Mr. Tradcast, that, hey, there's this thing called charity, theological virtue that you received at baptism? Because believe me, I've been on the receiving end of lacks of charity from people that are supposedly traditionalists. They are mean. They are nasty. As a matter of fact, I'd actually probably rather be locked up in a room with a Protestant to debate over these issues. Now, not a Baptist, one that's a drinker now, than I would a tradcath. Because a tradcath is going to go set of a contest to his grave with me.
Yeah, it's almost better to debate the lukewarm, I think, sometimes, than the strident, whether they're Protestant or Catholic or evangelical or whatever. Yeah, look, it's an interesting thing, you know, because, you know, somehow there are those who believe that if it's sola scriptura, right, if that's the basis of your faith, well, what happened between 33 A.D., March 24 or 5, 33 A.D., and the first printing of the Bible? What happened to all those souls? Did God abandon them all because they didn't have a Bible?
It
didn't even make any sense.
Yeah, and by the by, they until Gutenberg, none were printed. Anyone that like Brother Andre pointed out on the show the other day, well, let me tell you something, sir. If your ancestors had one, they paid a couple of $100,000 in today's dollars for it, and it took 18 to 21 years to have it made. That's how long it would take the monks to transcribe page by page. Say you want to open a new monastery or a new church, and of course you have to have you got to have a Bible there, right? Who would do that? They'd have monks that would sit at these desks, and you know, each of them take a chapter, and they would copy from one paper to the another, and then they'd have the head scribe or the abbot or whatever walking around going like, you can't use that page, it's got an error on it, and they couldn't make mistakes. This is tedious work here. Before Gutenberg came along and made it all one, you just drop those characters in there and press it down, bam, well, you got one. So, Ted, I'm just about out of time for this segment, but it is always a pleasure to hear from you, brother. Now, next time I mistakenly call your house instead of your cell phone, give my apologies to your wife who she mistook me for a telemarketer. What do you want? Who are you? Tell Marie I said I locked in the cell phone number, so I won't call the house again, okay?
I'll do it, brother.
All right, brother. God bless you.
All right, you too, bro.
He's a friend. I got a message from Ted. Call me. I went, okay. He's got three phone numbers, business, work, cell. I didn't look. I hit go. His wife answers. Who is this? I'm returning Ted's call. Sure you are. She's in New Jersey. Sure you are. What do you want? Hi, it's Mike Church and Ted Trump. Oh, Mike, why didn't you say so? We get all these telemarketers. I'm always on guard against the telemarketers. (844) 527-8723 If you want to listen to my interview with Matthew Sheffield on how the right got it wrong and about the conservative echo chamber, you can find it in the chat room at mikechurch.com. Mrs. McConnell has retrieved the link. It was from the 13th of September, 2016. Okay. Some other things that we have to do on a Free Phone Friday. I believe Debbie Schlussel will be with us in the next segment for this week's movie reviews. Got a couple of headlines here. Planned Parenthood's biggest midterm push ever for Democrats. Ladies and gentlemen, the baby killers are on the run. They're on the run. And when they get wind that some of us, Crusader Knights of the Rosary, are asking for the intercession of the Mother of the Redeemer to bring their ghastly, morbid, genocidal, legal industry to an end, to bring its legal protections to an end. These people aren't going to go down without a fight, folks. When they get wind, people are actually talking about, well, maybe we just, you know, need to make the whole thing illegal. I know what it was. Mitish Youngblood. To the chat room, madam. Send Mitish O'Connell the link, or send it to me, to the audio that you had from yesterday. I almost cried. There was some numbnut reporter meandering around the streets of London asking Londoners whether or not they thought three-year-olds ought to be taught about tranny mammies and how to become tranny mammies and fag hags. Every single one of them said yes.
This is how it's going.
We'll come back with that and much more on a Free Phone Friday here on the Crusade Channel.
The Mike Church Show. A lone voice crying out in the wilderness.
What rights do you think you're referring to?
Rights, like in that official paper that they wrote down the street there?
That's the Bill of Rights.
Yeah, the Bill of Rights. Don't it say something about going after what makes you happy?
No, that's the pursuit of happiness. But what's your point?
My point is I'm pursuing something and nobody looks too happy about it.
He's defending your pursuit of the right to happiness by way of the truth since Rocky IV.
Who's got the right to tell you that? Who? Nobody.
The Mike Church Show is heard exclusively on the Crusade Channel. King-sized truth from radio-sized speakers.
Excuse me, senor. May I speak to you, please? I asked for a Mai Tai, and they brought me a pina colada, and I said no salt. No salt for the margarita, but it had salt on it.
There's
big grains of salt on Los Cientos. What happens again? I won't be leaving a tip, because I could shut this whole resort down. Sir, I had to take my traveler's check to a competing resort.
I had to write a letter to your board of tourism and I could have this place condemned.
I could put strychnine in the guacamole. There was salt on the glass, big grains of salt.
In the dark, where your eyes couldn't see.
Friday tradition. You have to do it. It's incumbent. Welcome back. Mike Church Show here on the Crusade Channel featuring king-size truth from radio-sized speakers. By the way, got a challenge for you, Mrs. O'Connell, you BG hater. Name for me, anyone in the chat room at MikeChurch.com, you can call me with this. Name for me a more famous guitar riff than that one. As soon as there's 250 million people on the planet, as soon as they hear that, they know exactly what's coming. Some falsettos coming, there's some harmonies coming. They know that guitar riff. It has to be one of the most famous ones ever. Name one. I'm sure there is. I can't think of it. But name one that you would say is more famous, recognizable than that. It's a simple challenge. 844-527-8723, my telephone number, dancing in my hotel room. No. That's somebody, that's Angus just beating the snot out of a couple of strings. Come on, Barrett, you're better than that. Anyways, back to the news of the discussion here on the on the Mike Church Show here on the Crusade Channel. Let me reiterate our challenge here for now until the 2nd of April, which was to sign up 400 or to convert 400 basic or yearly Founders Pass members into Founding Brothers or Founding Fathers or Crusaders. And this is to stave off a financial shortfall. Many of you have already acted and have gone and logged in at CrusadeChannel.com and have upgraded your membership from Basic to Founding Brother. Thank you very much. We've had some people that have signed up in the last week. We had a brand new Crusader this week. So it's not falling on deaf ears, but we are nowhere near where this needs to be. So I implore you again. It's very simple. You go log in at CrusadeChannel.com if you're a basic yearly or a basic monthly. And then after you're logged in under a member tab, you'll see upgrade. Upgrade. Upgrade gonna get his money. Yes, he is. And hit the upgrade button, and they'll take you to the checkout page or to the plan page, and you can pick any plan that you like. By the by, did you know that you can do Crusader by the month or Founding Father by the month? Now, with the avalanche of new shows that we released in the last 24 hours, two new episodes of Joseph Pierce's Piercing Truth. Now, I wrote about this in today's Pile of Prep, Economics as if Families Mattered. There's a story in today's Pile of Prep. I want to read you the headline. Here it is. Here's a headline. Yo, big business. Money doesn't give you a right to manipulate politics. Now, I believe, I really truly believe this, that this is one is going to be one of the defining issues of the next small epoch in history and in time. As people start to come around to the idea, wait a minute, maybe this whole big box store invasion and revolution wasn't such a good idea. Maybe we were better off with mom and pop stores. Maybe we were better off when we knew who it was that produced our food. I'm going to tell you a story. Now, I encourage you, go to my site. If you haven't already downloaded these and you're a founding brother or higher, go get them today. Go listen to them. I think you'll benefit from them. If you go to MikeChurch.com and click today's Pile of Prep, Free Phone Friday Pile of Prep, under the story about this headline here, you'll see I linked to Joseph and I's four feature length discussions now based upon his book, Small is Still Beautiful, and upon the first six chapters of the book. These are great discussions. You're not going to get anywhere else because Pierce is just brilliant when it comes to this. And what he and I talk about is, okay, this is what the modern world says is economics or financial or whatever. And this maybe is the way it used to be. And if you take the, maybe there's a little ground in the middle there, or maybe there's a way to get from the modern back to the traditional. And we flesh out arguments and we talk about people that are already doing some of these things and about why they are beneficial to souls. You know, just because you work in finance or you work in business does not mean you sell your soul to business. You never sell your soul. Your first vocation is the first commandment. And if we get these vocations in the right order, then I think all the other vocations fall in line behind it. Now, that's not a perfect world. And I don't have a formula for it, but I do know that when Pierce and I discuss these things, and there's not, as I said, there's now four feature-length broadcast that you can download and be listening to tonight or today at CrusadeChannel.com in the on-demand store. I made sure that their WordPress tags match. So if you click any of the tags in any of them, it'll take you to a list of all of them. But I link to it at MikeChurch.com. And they're all hour, at least 1 hour long, and it's Joseph's and I discussion on these things. Look, somebody put this the other day in one of the pieces that we had on the show. Since when did it become advisable to have an entire food supply where no one that uses the food supply, and all we all do, knows the name of anyone that contributed anything to it? Folks, this is a defiance of the history of the human race that cannot possibly be a good thing. So I link to the Small is Still Beautiful episodes and encourage you to go listen to them. They're $2.99 a piece if you're not a Founders Pass member, or if you want to forward them along to friends or family and ask them to go download them. Again, if you're a founding brother or higher, they're free, part of your membership. So, and again, you can easily link to all four from my site, MikeChurch.com, today's Pile of Prep. But there is a point about this. Yo, big business. Money doesn't give you a right to manipulate politics. But you don't understand. It's not that they have a right to manipulate politics. It's that because they're so intertwined with politics and because they are part of the American civil religion. What you're seeing now, a corporation saying, you can't do business with us if you don't believe X. Because they've gotten so large and so powerful, nobody went, hey, man, I was just saying. I didn't take it all back. I didn't mean any of that. No, man, I'm all for whatever social justice warrior you say. No, I gotta have my Amazon widgets. And I give you as a per example. This may be impossible for some of you to do simply by virtue of the geographic area you live in, but that's fine. I give it simply as an example. After the conclusion of today's Mike Church Show here on the Crusade Channel, King Size Truth from Radio Size Speakers, Mrs. O'Connell is going to go and go drive into town, if you will, small town, and is going to go meet one of the proprietors of Credo Farms. Now, what's Credo Farms? Credo Farms is a mom and pop upstarts, a young couple with a lot of kids, trying to make a go of producing locally grown chicken, eggs, vegetables, soaps, and other things. And I told Mrs. Church about a month ago, yeah, but it costs more than Sam's. You got to get over the cost. Who cares? We're going to support the local farmer. Now, this comes up in several of those episodes with Joseph Pierce, and this is why you can hear Joseph's rooster crowing outside. Mitter and Mrs. Pierce produce their own poultry. They don't produce their own beef or pork, but they live near people that do. And Mitter Pierce tells me that he and his wife just made the decision. Look, if we can buy it locally, regardless of the price difference between what we pay for it locally and what it costs at Sam's or Walmart or Costco or whatever, we're going to buy it. We're going to know the person that grew the pig or the chicken. Again, we are an exception to the rule of history. As a matter of fact, I'm going to bring Debbie Schlussel on from DebbieDoesPolitics.com with this week's movie reviews. Because I just happen to know that Debbie's father was a butcher back in the day. Good morning, Debbie. How are you?
Hi. Good morning. My grandfather.
Grandfather was a butcher, right?
He was a kosher slaughterer. He had his own slaughterhouse, and the only reason he closed it and became a distributor of kosher products was because the state of Michigan became so big government on him and
right.
harassed his workers, and this is actually an example of big government and racism. Most of my grandfather's workers in the slaughterhouse were black, and the inspectors were racist and gave his workers such a hard time they wanted to quit. And it was hard to keep people employed because of that reason. And then there were other big government regulations that made it so expensive. My dad was an ophthalmologist, my late father, and he did a lot of surgery on people's eyes back in the day. And in those days, the state did not require foot pedal operated sinks in operating rooms. But they did require it in slaughterhouse rooms, and it was just ridiculous, the expense. So
right.
My father was forced out.
Well, that's how it works. And then therefore, the local guy is forced out in favor of the regional, and then the regional is forced out in favor of the national, and then the national for the Chinese and the international. And before you know it, you don't know where your food is coming from.
Right, or what's in it.
So, people don't think that if you bring this up to somebody, bah, whatever, so what? What do you mean, so what? You eat that stuff, dude. The stuff will kill you. what do you mean, so what? It is really quite incredible, the flippancy, the lack of regard for knowing someone, I mean, anyone in the food supply chain to me is a flashing warning signal that goes, warning, warning, Will Robinson. Warning, warning, you're being warned. Anyways, I thought I'd bring it up. What's playing at the Paradise Theater this week?
All right, so there are two big new movies. And by the way, you know, this Sunday is the night that all the liberal annoyances get together. Sunday is Oscar night. I don't remember, because you were off, I believe, for the holidays. Did we discuss the movie Shape of Water, which is nominated for the most?
Yes, the woman has a trans species relationship.
Right, so we did discuss it. Did we discuss the three billboards outside Abington, Missouri?
I heard something. Frances McDormand, right?
Right.
Right.
That is also nominated for, I think, like the second most movies and expected to win a lot of them. That movie is your typical anti-small-town America movie, you know, the disdain for flyover country. Everybody's racist. The cops are racist. Nobody cares about a girl that was raped and murdered. Blah, blah, blah. The police are violent against people who are friendly to black people. And
what
so
a shock.
It was just a horrible, horrible movie. And so, of course, it's probably going to win some awards. But this weekend, the two new movies are Black Sparrow and Death Wish. I'll start with Death Wish because, as you may remember, I am a huge fan of the original Death Wish movie from the 70s.
Charles Bronson.
Right.
Yes.
And I'm a huge fan of Charles Bronson, one of my favorite actors of all time. There's nobody like him, won't be ever after, including Bruce Willis, who is in this movie. I did expect the movie not to be that great. It's better than I expected, but it's no Death Wish. I mean, the original is still can retire the undefeated champion of Death Wish movies because the original is just so much better. In the original, Paul Kersey, the character played by Charles Bronson, is a liberal. He lives on the Upper East Side of New York.
Yep.
Where a lot of very liberal people live. He is very upper class. He's a wealthy guy. He feels bad for the poor, which, you know, conservatives, we feel bad for them too. It's just we have better solutions to get them out of poverty. And it doesn't involve forcing everybody else to pay to do that and never get them out. But anyway, in the original, Paul Kersey is building housing projects. He starts to design housing projects for the poor. He, at the beginning of the movie, he and his wife are on a vacation, and he wants to have sex on the beach, and she does not want to do that in public. I mean, he's just a very liberal guy. But then when thugs break into his apartment and, you know, by the way, in the original Death Wish movie, the women cannot fight back, even if they try. They cannot. There are three thugs, one of whom is played by Jeff Goldblum, and who he's the white one, because they have a white one, a Hispanic one, and a black one, as I recall.
Okay.
And the women cannot fight back. The wife is killed. The daughter is raped, and she becomes, she is in a coma and becomes catatonic. And I remember there is a great discussion that he has with his son-in-law, Paul Kersey has with his son-in-law when they're coming out of the hospital and they go to visit the daughter. And his son-in-law says how, you know, you just have to give up and let people do what they did and that's it. And Paul Kersey says, no, you have to fight back. You can't let these thugs take over and do what they're doing with impunity. And it's a great conversation because it's a classic liberal versus conservative argument. And I really think that the new movie is missing a lot of those kinds of things. Like in the original, also Paul Kersey goes to one of those fancy parties on the Upper East Side after he started shooting a lot of the criminals in Manhattan. And a lot of people at the party are having discussions, and there are other classic liberal versus conservative arguments where some liberals at the party are saying that they're not sure they like vigilantes, but most of the people are saying, no, you know, I actually think this guy's cleaning up New York, and he's and criminals are afraid, and crime is going down. And they show that most of the people in the polls support what Charles Bronson's character, Paul Kersey, is doing. In this new movie by Eli Roth, who of the movie fame and
they let Eli Roth ruin Death Wish? Come on!
Well, I'm not sure he ruined it, but it's like, it's not really Death Wish. It's like a different version of it. In this movie, the characters aren't as charming. There's that police detective or police chief that is looking to find who is, you know, he thinks it's Paul Kersey. He can't quite prove it, and he's always on his tail. It's like a cat versus mouse thing, and it's almost like Wile E. Coyote versus the Roadrunner, because they're friendly enemies. They're frenemies. In this movie, there's sort of that, but it's just not quite the same. Anyhow, you know, Bruce Willis is fine. It's just, it's not Charles Bronson. In this movie, it takes place in Chicago, which is the other gun control city. And where a lot of murders are going on, despite the toughest gun control in the, one of the toughest set of gun control laws in the country. Bruce Willis's Paul Kersey is a doctor. He's not an architect. There's no politics discussed. His views aren't discussed. His wife is murdered in a robbery gone bad. The one thing I didn't like, I specifically did not like about this movie was, it's a group of robbery people, robbers who are robbing different homes of wealthy people, and they never killed any of the people, except for in this case, because because Bruce Willis's wife and daughter fought back. And I didn't like the message that if you fight back, you're going to get killed, so you should just let people rob you and take the stuff and leave. And molest your daughter, which one of the guys was doing to his daughter. I just didn't like that message, because I feel like a lot of times you don't fight back at all and you'll still get killed, and you have to try and fight back to save your lives. So I wish it was that message, what I just said, instead of the former message. But it's an okay movie. It's a little bit more graphic than the original Death Wish.
Well, of course.
In this movie, Bruce Willis, you know, in the original Death Wish, I believe Paul Kersey is a Korean War veteran. He may be a Vietnam War veteran.
It's been a long time since I... So they made like three of them, though. There was more than one Death Wish. There was...
I think there were four or five.
Yeah, right. And then the last one, didn't he pass the vigilante on to his kid or something?
I think you're right.
Been a long time. I also remember one of the villains' name, he called himself Ramrod.
I don't remember that.
I remember Ramrod came after Bronson or his new wife or daughter or something like that, came walking down the street.
Might have been a Death Wish 3, because I do remember he had a new wife and an adopted daughter.
Yeah, and it was, I'm trying to remember who played. Anyways, I remember them all, I watched them all, and as soon as you said Eli Roth, they were, of all people, choose, I would have expected an absolute disaster and am shocked.
It's not bad. It's actually a decent movie. I clapped a few times.
Okay.
It's a decent movie. I like the ending of it. It's a different kind of ending than the original Death Wish. Although part of it is similar to the ending, part of the ending is similar to the original Death Wish, but it's a good movie. But it's not the original. The original is far superior, but this is not bad. And it couldn't have come at a better time, because I think it's a good answer to all the people yelling and screaming and whining and crying for gun control after what happened in Parkland, Florida. I think this gives the other side of why we do need guns, and what happens when you live in a city where there is a lot of gun control. Although, they did make it look too easy to get guns in Chicago legally, which we know it's not easy in Chicago. And that is another quibble I have with the movie. Although, I presume, based on the home in the movie, that Bruce Willis lives in the suburbs of Chicago, they don't say, and probably in the suburbs it is easier than in the city proper. But it's not bad. Bruce Willis is good in this. Again, he's no Charles Bronson, but I do recommend the movie. There is one part of it that's a little bit more graphic and bloody and sadistic than I liked, and the original movie is not so. And I had to cover my face for like half a minute.
Yeah.
But you know, I see a lot of these movies, so if I cover my face there after I've been so desensitized, it was kind of gross, this one part of it. But I would give this movie 1.5 and maybe even 2 Reagans.
Okay.
So that's that movie. Then there's Black Spiro. Black Spiro is the latest movie from Jennifer Lawrence, who, by the way, I don't know if you saw 60 Minutes last Sunday where she was interviewed. They did a whole puff piece about her.
Mm-hmm.
And
I did not.
She talked about how she dropped out of middle school.
She dropped out of middle school?
Yes.
I didn't know you were allowed to drop out of middle school.
I didn't either. I thought you had to be in school till 16 in most jurisdictions in the union, but she dropped out at 14.
Did not know.
And what kind of parents let their daughter drop out of school at 14? Not good ones.
Well, if you're knocking a couple of mil back for the fam acting in movies.
Yeah, she is. So they did ultimately make the right decision. But that's really like gambling on the Powerball, that your daughter is going to win the Powerball, and the likelihood is very low.
So it's Black Sparrow or Red Sparrow?
Oh, did I say black? I meant red.
It's Sorry. Red Sparrow, right. Is this a Hunger Games spinoff? What is this?
No, it has nothing to do with the Hunger Games. Here's what it
Thank
is.
Thank heavens.
So Jennifer Lawrence is a ballerina, a prima ballerina in Russia. She is in the National Ballet.
Mm-hmm.
So she, or the Moscow Ballet. And an accident happens, and she is forced out of ballet and into, she has nothing else she can do. She's forced by her evil uncle, who is in the KGB, is high up in the KGB, to become a sparrow, which she has to go to sparrow school, which is basically to be a Soviet spy, but not just any kind of Soviet spy, but a Russian spy, not just any Russian spy, but a seductive spy. In other words, she's basically, she calls it whore school, and it's actually that, because they teach these people, men and women, how to get into the minds of the American or Western subject they are trying to get information from, and how to become their object of desire and sleep with them and get what they need, the information they need from them.
Can she drop out of sparrow school?
No. She wants to, but she can't.
Oh, okay.
And basically, there's a lot of nudity because they're basically taught how to overpower people through sex. And it was a little way too graphic for my taste. But Jennifer Lawrence chose this movie, she said, on 60 Minutes because people stole her nude photos by hacking, which, if you don't want nude photos out there, here's the tip.
Don't take any.
Exactly. So, anyway, she said that she wanted to reclaim her nudity, so she did reclaim it by putting it all out there. And she said, if you don't like boobs, don't go see this movie, which she's a liar. She said that to get people to see the movie, because there's one boob and a butt, and that's it.
One boob and one butt equals...
Right. One boob and a butt.
That's one boob, and that's a butt too far, ma'am.
Right, and it is a barely visible boob, but you
Where's Ryan O'Neal when we need him? That's a butt bridge too far.
Right, but you see what I'm saying here. She did said that because she wants people to think that there are endless topless scenes of her and they'll all run out to see it, but there really aren't. That she's lying. It's not truth in advertising.
Well, I'm not going to see it now because I was going. I'm all.
I'm just kidding.
I'm kidding.
But you know what I'm saying.
Yes.
A lot of people are going to run.
Well, look, if you want butt, boob, and everything else, then go rent Atomic Blonde.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Well, you know, it's funny.
You'll be lacking for nothing in Atomic Blonde, let me assure you.
It's funny you mention Atomic Blonde because this has. There are a lot of similarities between this and Atomic Blonde. She becomes a blonde. She's a brunette at the beginning of the movie. She becomes a blonde, and her whole thing is she's trying.
Wait a minute, Debbie, I'm confused. Why are they making movies about subjectifying women and turning them into hose beasts? That was the Russian turning them into hose beasts. That was not Americans. That was what the evil KGB did. That was not what Russians do. That's not what Americans do. That's what Russians do. I mean, that's a pretty lame in the era of Me Too. Hashtag Me Too.
Well, you know what, Mike? As we've discussed in the past, these are people who are in an industry that objectifies women, and then they expect not to be objectified to get these jobs objectifying women, and they're a bunch of hypocrites.
Yeah, can you prove you're a good objectifier, ma'am? There's a couch over there. Let's go see how good you are.
Exactly. But in this movie, there's also torture that was way too graphic for me.
Mm-hmm.
I covered my face. There was a lot of screaming of a man enduring torture that I didn't like it. But anyway, I mean, and by the way, so this movie, it's highly entertaining. It really builds up. I mean, I wasn't bored for a minute. It really builds up to something, but then at the end, it fizzles. I thought this great build up throughout the movie to kind of a fizzling end. It's like a nothing. And here's the other thing. So her job in the movie is, Joel Edgerton, who I do like as an actor, the Australian actor Joel Edgerton, he plays an American spy in Russia who has turned a Soviet or a Russian to his side to feed him information, and the Russians are trying to find out who that is. So they send Jennifer Lawrence to Germany, where he is now, I think Czechoslovakia.
Mm-hmm.
Is there still a Czechoslovakia? The Czech Republic.
I don't know, is there?
Or maybe it's Hungary. It's Hungary.
Well, there's still certainly a Hungary.
Right, right. They send her, I think, to Hungary, because I think it is Budapest that they send her to. I can't remember, because they only mention it like once or twice, but I think that's where they send her to seduce Joel Edgerton, the American, to
mm-hmm.
try and find out. They want to know who is this Russian double agent. This Russian they believe may be in the KGB. They don't know who it is, but who is this Russian who is feeding information to the Americans and is a traitor? Now, here's my biggest beef with this movie besides the aforementioned. You can't really tell, is this the KGB or the Russians? Because it really takes place now. They have modern smartphone cell phones, all right? So it would have to take place within the last 10 years. I mean, they have phones that look like iPhones or Android, whatever. So that's one thing. The other thing is, if it does take place now, it just doesn't make sense to me because it has a very Cold War aura to it. I mean, even though the Democrats want us to think that Russia's our biggest enemy right now.
I was going
to
say, you mean Rich Lowry produced this? Ramesh Ponnaroo produced this? I know it was produced
by that paragon of Cold War virtue and post 9/11 warmongering, Mark Levin. This sounds like a Levin production here.
Well, let me tell you, get off the phone, you big dope. The Russians are out there to get us. They're all going to kill us.
Sure, Mark, sure. So it has a feel of Cold War flick, but there's...
Right.
Well, that would mean that only geezers like me and you would get it. Young people wouldn't get it.
Exactly. That's why it doesn't make sense to me, because at least with Atomic Blonde, they told you it takes place in the 80s or 90s, right?
Yeah.
The 90s. Am I right?
It's like the first scene, it was 1987 or something
right.
like that.
Yeah.
So, and to get into this Red Sparrow movie, then the wheelchair ramps will have to be initiated.
Well, I mean, this is the thing. You can't really tell.
You're gonna have to have an intermission pee break sometime during the middle.
I mean, it just doesn't make sense for taking place not during the Cold War, because you would not have. I know we still spy on the Russians. I know they still spy on us. We know that's a big thing still, but it's still not to the extent that's in this movie where there would be this kind of stuff that's going on. So that's what didn't make sense to me.
Mm.
Apparently it is based on a graphic novel, and I don't know when the graphic novel upon which it's based takes place. Maybe that does take place during the Cold War, but this has to take place now given the technology, and it just makes less sense given that. I would love to see a Red Sparrow of where somebody infiltrates ISIS or, you know, some other enemy, Al-Qaeda, than this. It would be more appropriate for right now.
Well, so what's the upshot? Is it worth seeing? Is it good,
you know what,
bad?
I have mixed feelings about it. Like I said, the sex is too graphic. The violence is too, the torture is too graphic. And I felt like it was a big buildup for a fizzle, for nothing. But that said, it was entertaining until the end, which was a letdown. So I guess it's definitely not for children, and even for adults, you may like it, but
you may not.
Well, beware of the caveats I mentioned.
All right, so
I don't even know what rating to give it. I guess maybe I might give it one Mark and a half a Reagan, or just a wash. I don't know.
Yeah, meh.
Yeah.
All right. One final thing before you'd mentioned the water movie, the Water World.
Shape of Water.
What is it called?
The Shape of Water.
Shape of Water. Somebody told me that they saw it, and this is a very morally upright person. They said, well, we didn't know about the trans species stuff, but if you suspend that, it wasn't bad. I went, really?
But the Kremlin, the Soviet spy is one of the heroes in this movie. The communists are the good guys. And the Americans are the bad guys. What about that part of it?
No, you're talking about the Shape of Water?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know. I think in some instances we are the bad guys, but I don't know. I haven't seen the movie.
Come on. I mean, in the Cold War, because this takes place in the late 50s or early
60s. In the Cold War, no. Obviously, we were not the enemies.
We were the good guys. Yes. They were the bad guys.
Yes. So Shape of Water takes place in the 50s?
It's either the late 50s or the early 60s.
Okay, all right. Well, then they got the enemies all backwards and all that. Anyways,
right.
I just thought that I would mention it, but another film that is up for...
It shows the woman masturbating every morning.
Yeah,
a lot of stuff.
Yeah, I'm not going to am not going to be renting it. I'm not. Anyways, I did see, and I know that you kind of went, it's all right. But I really, really, really liked Dunkirk. I saw it three times. As a matter of fact, I wish I'd have bought it the first time around. And I'll tell you why I liked it. Number one, the cinematography is actual camera photographic cinematography. That's some skill, sister, going on to shoot that movie. I like the fact that there were no over-the-top actor turn-ins.
Kenneth Branagh was good. He wasn't over the top. The shivering actor, the shivering soldier, Cillian Murphy, was good. He wasn't over the top.
Did they pronounce Cillian? I didn't know that.
I don't know. Cillian, Chillian? I don't
thought it was Killian.
Or maybe it is Killian. So I like the cinematography. I like the story. I like the beauty of the, even though it's dark, you know, at the end, you kind of get the sunshine. I like that that there are heroes made out of regular people, and that there are, you're shown the weakness of what war is, and just how horrid it is, and what it does to men, young men. You know, they get put in this position, oh, it's all glorious. No, dude, it's not. So I like that part of it. But there's another part to Dunkirk, which is going to cost it the Oscar if anyone figures it out. And they're going to penalize us. They're going to penalize Christopher Nolan for this. Remember, Debbie, when Shivering Soldier gets on the boat? And first, you know, he's thankful and all that. And then he starts to have an anxiety attack when he sees the old man, you know, going back towards the war zone to go pick more people up. And he inadvertently knocks that kid down the stairs and he bangs his head, right?
Yes.
Okay, the kid dies, right?
Right.
Okay. Now, I know you're not a Christian.
The boat owner's son.
Yeah, right. I know you're a Jew and I am a Christian, but there is a very powerful moral tale going on here. Because at the end of the movie, the old man and the surviving son forgive the shivering soldier. That's mercy. That's a powerful lesson that Nolan kind of just tucked in there. He didn't make a big deal out of it, but it is most certainly part of the story. This guy thought this movie out. I think you ought to watch it again. There's a lot to appreciate in Dunkirk.
I can't watch it again. I just can't. I'm sorry.
All right, we'll have to disagree on that one because that's my vote for Best Picture. That's my vote for Best Picture. I have spoken.
I thought it was...
El Jefe Dude has spoken!
See, to me, it was too loud. Also, did you see it in the theater?
No, saw it home theater.
I saw it in the theater with a friend. We both had to put earplugs in.
I saw it. The Regal King Dude won.
All right. Well, the Regal Beagle King Dude. I saw it in the theater. It was too loud the entire time. We had to put earplugs in. I felt like it was boring. I felt like nothing really ever happened. I felt like they could have done more with the story of what Dunkirk and what happened there. I do agree with you with the father forgiving about his losing his son. That was very touching. Would it have killed them to show a swastika? You didn't see that. You didn't know they were Germans. You didn't know who was the enemy. Like, they didn't identify them.
Yeah, but
really.
Look at the savagery of the enemy. I mean, they were.
But it didn't show that they were Nazis. Why?
Oh, all right. Well, didn't. I don't know. It's not a killer for me. Now that I've seen Interstellar and Dunkirk several times.
Wait, you liked... Well, Interstellar I liked. All right.
Okay. So now that I've seen a couple of Nolan films, Debbie, this guy is the anti-Weinstein. So let's not throw the babies out with the bathwater. He is an actual filmmaker that is actually taking his time to make, I think, good quality movies. Now, they may not all rock, but the stuff that he's made so far, there's some thought put into this. I don't know. I always try to look.
We really disagree on the movies, but on that one, we disagree.
What, you don't like Christopher Nolan?
No, I do like him. Okay. I didn't like that movie.
Oh, Dunkirk. Okay.
Yeah.
All right, you're fired. Now, I'm kidding. No, I'm not going to pull an Oklahoma backbencher talk show host on you.
Like that can't.
That's what Levin would say. I'm not going to pull a backbencher on you. All right, Debbie. Thank you for the reviews. Anything else?
Thank you. What?
No, are you going to be watching the Oscar ceremony? I will not.
I probably am going to watch it. You know, for the first time this year, I didn't watch the Super Bowl. And it actually was nice. I watched Shark Tank instead, but this is on ABC, so Shark Tank isn't going to be on. I probably will watch it just because I'm a movie critic and I like to see.
Well, I tell you what, if you watch the Oscars and if you don't have a court case to get to Monday morning, if you want to call and give us a report, because I'm not going to watch, I'm not wasting my time. But if you want to call a report in, I would love to have your Oscar rundown if you have time.
All right. I can't remember what I have on Monday, but I'll look at my calendar. I probably could call in.
Man, I wish I couldn't remember what I have Monday.
Well, you know, because we have a regular, consistent schedule, which I often wish I had.
No, you don't.
Unfortunately, it's not consistent.
No, you don't. Trust me, you don't want the regular schedule. All right, read Debbie's blog at DebbieDoesPolitics.com. You can also go to DebbieDoesMovies.com. And for the ones that she reviews and she posts the text versions of, it is a pretty good database to if you're looking for something to rent. Of course, on Friday evenings, beginning at 4, you can always listen to 3 hours worth of the very latest movie reviews that Debbie and I have done. So since I'll go back a couple of weeks, maybe even a month or so, there may be something that's actually still in the theater or has already made it to rental. So there you go.
One other thing, Mike, I want to mention is I'm going to try. I can't promise, but I'm going to try to get up. I know I'm way late. Put up my top 10 movies for last year, which do not include any Oscar nominees. Because the best movies last year were not nominated for the Oscars.
Well,
and I want to put in a plug for two movies I really liked.
Remember, and what else?
Well, no, that was from 2 years ago.
Oh, okay.
That's from not last year, but the year before. No, the two movies I liked Brad's Status.
Brad Status?
Yeah, that was the movie with Ben Stiller. It's very funny.
Okay.
And it hits a lot of themes that I liked. I liked Ingrid Goes West. I liked The Founder about McDonald's.
Yes. Yes.
I liked Gold with Matthew McConaughey.
Yes.
And there were some other movies I liked too, but those are the ones I can remember that are going to be on my list.
Now, who was the what was the movie with Morgan Freeman and Michael Caine and Alan Arkin?
Oh, I loved that movie.
I loved it. I bought it.
Going
I can't even remember the name
style.
Of it. What? Going in Style.
Yeah.
Folks, if you can actually watch this with your kids if you have VidAngels, maybe there's a couple of little scenes you want to cut out. Fantastic, engaging, great little caper flick, a lot of humor. Of course, anything that Alan Arkin's in is going to have humor.
All right, so you did see that.
Oh, I loved it.
All right.
Loved
it. We totally agree on that. That was one of the best movies of the year for me.
Well, I haven't seen Brad Status, so I can't say. I haven't seen Ingrid Goes West. I concur, going in style. Gold with Matthew McConaughey. Great. You know, it gets like, I think, 57% on maybe even lower on Rotten Tomatoes. Pure proof right there. Don't believe Rotten Tomatoes.
Exactly.
That film is it's based on a true story. That story actually is pretty accurate.
Except the, well.
Well, I know they fudged part of the ending.
The ending didn't happen. And also the ending could not happen. I can't say why because it'll spoil it.
Don't say it.
But. It can't happen because
okay.
of something.
Yeah.
To tell Mike off the air.
Yeah. And
he knows why.
Yeah. And Michael Keaton as Ray Kroc and the Founder. Yes. I kind of didn't like the end result, but.
Yeah. I'm
good
it's
film.
It's anti big business. It's anti.
Well, I think it's just anti Ray Kroc. I don't think it's anti big business.
All right.
But can I tell you that Mittis Church has not, she vowed that she would never go to a McDonald's again, knowing that his heirs are getting rent from the sale of a Big Mac. She has not been back. And you're talking about a two-a-day habit here.
Well, you know what happened was his the wife that they showed that he stole from one of his franchisees,
yep.
Joan Crock.
Yeah.
Joan. So the Joan Crock, if you ever listen to NPR, the National Palestinian Radio, NPR, they are funded in large part by the Joan Crock Foundation. The Joan Crock Foundation, Ray Kroc was a Republican. He was very conservative. He gave to right-wing causes. Joan Crock, after Ray Kroc died, took all the money and gave it to far left-wing causes. And she funded the Democratic Party. She funded, like, a lot of George. She was, like, the George Soros of her day. And her foundation is still going on, even though she's been dead for a while. And it funds a lot of left.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, I think that we actually talked about this and had a.
But I think McDonald's right now, I don't think that the Joan Crock Foundation has any stock in McDonald's anymore. I don't know for sure, but I don't believe so. I think it's all publicly held now.
I don't know.
But I do know this. I don't know that the McDonald brothers, because I researched this, I was going to write a little paper about it, just never got around to it. I do know that the McDonald brothers were Irish Catholics, gullible Irish Catholics, that they got outplayed. You know, Rick Hawk just cleaned their clocks.
If what is in the movie is accurate, they were stupid because they could have worked with him, given him a higher percentage.
Well, no, they gave him the we'll talk about it another day. I got to go.
All right.
All right. That's Debbie Schlussel from DebbieDoesPolitics.com. Debbie, thank you.
Have a great weekend.
All right, you too, with this week's movie reviews. There are Irish Catholics that they trusted people. We're supposed to. Like David Simpson says on the True Money Show all the time. Folks, if you want to live in society where there's no trust, why? If you don't, I've done entire episodes on this before here on this show. So if you have driven to work today, if you drove down any yellow striped two lane highways, you just experienced trust. You trusted that the guy coming at you in the other lane was not going to cross the lane and hit you head on. A civilized society is not going to function without trust. Sorry, it's not. I don't care who's running it. So the idea that, the McDonald brothers got what they deserved because they were stupid bitches. So they invented. They didn't have the desire. They didn't have the desire to leave this world with bank vaults filled with money. You know that the McDonald brothers were going to give their San Bernardino, the original McDonald's, they were going to give that original restaurant, they were going to give it to their employees. Give it to them. Ray Kroc said no. Mrs. O'Connell has posted in the chat room from the DailyMail.com exclusive how McDonald's founder cheated the brothers who really started the empire out of hundreds of millions, wrote them out of company history, and left one to die of heart failure and the other barely a millionaire. Kroc was despicable. You know, in his spirit of solidarity and subsidiarity, Kroc was the antithesis. And anyone that thinks that that's a good thing, well, then you know what? You get Amazon. Which, speaking of which reminds me. And I was speaking earlier today about, we actually started the 2018 Hogs for the Cause, raising funds for those families that have children suffering pediatric brain cancers. So it's not a test run or anything. It's not going to start next week. It started yesterday. You can go to barbacoabrotherhood.com and make a donation. Sign up to be a $25 level sponsor or maybe even a $1,000 level sponsor to join the fraternity. We've got swag. We've got caps, work shirts, lapel pins, you name it. And you can just make a cash donation. Folks, it's a great cause. I don't do things that aren't great causes. And last year, I went to the grant presentation for young Nadine Abear, who was from a horribly poor family and actually needed that funding. And today, I went to go see Nadine at Children's Hospital in New Orleans. She had the chemotherapy gizmo that pumped the radiation right into the aorta. It was on her chest. You could see it in the pictures on the site. That's the kind of charity the Hogs for the Cause is, and that I ask you to support every year, and you do. So just a reminder, it's already begun. March the 23rd looms a mere 3 weeks from today. Don't put it off. Go to barbacoabrotherhood.com. But on that subject of big business and solidarity and all that, Mitter Joss Will, who has not forgotten the Hogs children this year, has already made his donation. And by the by, one of the things that's auctioned off, and we have auctions that will start today for bottles of St. Francis wine from the St. Francis Winery, donated by Mitter Will. One of the things that we will auction off is a lifetime membership to the Founders Pass membership. Like I said last year, we don't sell lifetime memberships. You can't buy one. However, from time to time, to raise funds for some purpose like this, charitable purpose, we'll auction one off. Mitter Will actually got last year's. This year, another lifetime membership will go up to be auctioned off. So it's a very small elite group. I think there are six lifetime members. You could count them on, well, you need one hand, two hands. Anyways, in the box that Mitter Will sent was this amazing little pamphlet. I'll show it to the U-Boob audience, who's experiencing technical difficulties today for some reason. The pamphlet is Against Amazon, Seven Arguments, One Manifesto by Jorge Carrion. And, you know, ironically, the book had to be translated. Anyways, it begins thus. What's the first reason why you're against Amazon? Number one, because I don't want to be an accomplice to symbolic expropriation. For 55 years, that building in Barcelona, one of the city's few examples of modern industrial architecture, was the head office of the publishers Gustavo Gili. Now, after a refurbishment costing several million euros, it has become Amazon's local center of operations. Thanks to the technology of efficiency and immediacy it houses, Barcelona is now one of 45 cities in the world where the company guarantees delivery of products in an hour. The Canada Bookshop is shut in 2013 after over 80 years of existence, is now a gigantic mango clothes store. The Catalonia Bookshop, after over 100, is now a McDonald's with a kitsch modernist decor. Expropriation is literal and physical, but also symbolic. If you enter Amazon Bookshop on Google, dozens of links appear to Amazon pages that sell bookshelves. As I will never tire of repeating, Amazon is not a bookshop. It is a hypermarket. Its warehouses store books next to toasters, toys, or skateboards. It's in its new physical bookshops, books are placed face up because they only display the 5,000 best-selling books most sought after by their customers. In other words, mostly crap and garbage. You know, the stuff that a politically incorrect guide to the NRA or something stupid like that that Regnery will put out. We have a bookstore here, by the by. Nobody knows about it. It's the best-kept secret in all of St. Tammany Parish, but it's one whale of a bookstore here. And our authors sell to us autograph books. What now, why am I insistent on, if you're an author and you want to sell your book in our store, that you have to sign them? Why? That means that I know the author. I'm not just going down a bestseller list. It means something. That book means something. It ought to mean something to the person that buys it. The guy or the gal took the time out to sell it. I mean, to sign it. That's pretty big. But in 2018, America, that's just anachronistic and stupid. Oh, it's charming, Mike. I don't read your books. They're not the titles I want. Yes. Get the politically incorrect guide to the NRA instead. What a great citizen you are. In its new physical bookshop, books are placed face up because they only display the 5,000 best-selling books most sought after by their customers. A lot less than the number on the shelves of genuine bookshops that are prepared to take risks. Amazon is now considering whether to repeat the same operation with a chain of small supermarkets. So in other words, when you go to a Whole Food market, forget about the Whole Food. We just want what Whole sells best. We don't care where it came from. We don't care who made it. We don't care what process was used to make it. Just stick it on the shelves. Make sure it's in the top 10 of whatever brand, whatever category that particular product is in, and then we'll sell it. Economics without community, recipe for totalitarian disaster. And you people are going to get what you deserve when Amazon controls the food supply and you can't get the kind of food that you want. Well, you know, we don't have that. We stopped making that. But here, there's some Soylent Orange over there. No, no, it's not made from humans yet, but it's good, pretty good. Pretty good. As far as it is concerned, there is no difference between a cultural institution and an establishment that sells food and other goods. I mean, this guy makes eminent sense. Jeff Bezos has a history of lengthy symbolic expropriation. He plumped for the sale of books rather than electrical goods because he saw a niche in the market. All available titles couldn't fit in bookshops, and he was in a position to offer every single one. In the 1990s, there were a few large-scale competitors, like Barnes & Noble and Borders, and distributors had already adapted their catalogs to the digital age with ISBN numbers incorporated. That was why Bezos followed a course offered by the American Booksellers Association and in record time appropriated the prestige books had accumulated over centuries. Even today, when Amazon produces television series, offers music online, stocks spare parts for our cars and motorcycles, and is considering whether to become a mobile phone operator, everybody continues to associate the brand with the object and symbol that we call a book. Kindle, from its launch in 2007, has imitated the form of the printed page and the tone of the ink. Fortunately for the moment, they can't reproduce the vegetable feel or the smell of lignum on screen. Whether we like it or not, we still cannot remember with the same precision what we read on paper and what we read in an e-book. Architectural transitions happen quickly, mental transitions less so, fortunately. 844-527-8723. 844-5-CRUSADE, the almost was becoming regular, 8:22 a.m. AT&T fiber optic hiccup has just occurred. If you lost the show for a minute or two, never fear. You can always become a Founders Pass member today at CRUSADEchannel.com. Update your membership today if you're a monthly basic or a monthly yearly to Founding Brother. We need 400 of you to do it. I haven't counted up thus far, but I know it's not 400. It's not a joke. It's kind of like a drill. It's not a drill for the Barbacoa Brotherhood and the Hogs. The 400 member upgrade, it's not a drill either. But we're happy to be here on a Friday here on the Crusade Channel. So go to CrusadeChannel.com, log in today, upgrade your membership to Founding Brother or higher, and thank you very much. Don't forget, brand new episodes of The Piercing Truth, episode number 7 and episode number 8 are now available. If you're a Founding Brother or higher, they are free. They're in the on-demand store, CrusadeChannel.com. We'll have the brand new Deliver Us From Evil tapes, a series. I guess no one listened to this last night other than me and you. I got 0.0 comments on a show that took over 40 hours to produce. But it will be available for download, and we have lots of previews of it running right now on the channel. As a matter of fact, one's coming up after the 8:30 a.m. news. Folks, we are contractually obligated to be here until 9. If you want to extend the show, you're going to need to call 844-5-CRUSADE. Now, here with your 8:30 a.m. news headline central, 9:30 Eastern Time, is Mitty's Youngblood.